The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church and the world. And we kind of just say, just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We look at what's going on in the world through the prism of kind of our Catholic social teaching, and we try to kind of reflect on that. We try to talk about those topics and to kind of think about it as how we might raise our awareness and how we might then kind of think about the actions where we devote our time, our energy, our talent to making our world more just and more compassionate. And sometimes we do this in large groups and sometimes we do it as individuals, but that's why we call it just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And if each of us did that, our world certainly would be more compassionate and it would be more just. Well, we're in the Memorial Day weekend, and Memorial Day, in a lot of our minds, is kind of the beginning of summer, even though the sun and the moon and all of those type of things only has it come about a little bit later in June. But I think for many of us, Memorial Day is kind of the beginning of summer, and we think about summer activities. But the reality is that Memorial Day actually looks back to the past, and it remembers those who gave their lives in war, and we treat the weekend and we treat Memorial Day with a great deal of respect for those who gave their lives for fighting for the cause of democracy, fighting for this country. And so today we're going to be remembering that, and our first guest is going to be Brian Anderson, who is a veteran of tours of duty in Iraq, and he is an author, he's an actor, he's a stuntman, he's a spokesman for Quantum Rehab, which is a rehab and mobility manufacturer in Pennsylvania, and he also is a spokesperson for two organizations that provide supportive services for veterans, the Gary Sinise Foundation and the USA Cares. And on his second tour of duty in Iraq, Brian sustained wounds that actually caused him to lose both his legs and his left hand. And he's going to be talking about his service, but his recovery and his current work of making appearances and all of the various things that he does and delivering a message of perseverance and determination. So I'm just really grateful that in a few minutes, Brian Anderson is going to be with us on our Memorial Day weekend show. And then a little bit later on in the show, we'll speak with John Schroen, who is the general manager of a cafe in the Southwest. He's in Phoenix, Arizona. It's called the Refuge Cafe because it's a place where people can gather, people who, you know, may be needing a place where they can kind of feel at home, where they can take refuge. And this is a cafe, a business that is a social enterprise of Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Phoenix, Arizona. And so we're going to be speaking with him a little bit later on about that. And hopefully John Strawn is going to give us a little bit of insights about social entrepreneurship and a little bit of insight about who it is who kind of takes refuge at the Refuge Cafe. So thank you all for joining us today on Just Love. A little bit later on in our show, I'm going to kind of speak a little bit about recounting the week that I had. It was a really kind of interesting, and it was a very, very fascinating week, a week that kind of I was privileged to participate in a number of different events during the week, which really were very important. I just considered it a blessing to be, you know, to be part of them, and I'll share that with our listeners a little bit later on in the show. Just to give you a little preview, I was at a dinner with the Pope's representative to Syria, the Cardinal, who's the Archbishop, Papal Nuncio to Syria, the other night, and listening to his perspective on what's going on in that part of the world was, you know, pretty interesting, pretty fascinating. And then I was also at a dinner that Cardinal Dolan hosted this week, in which he invited into his own house a dozen or so immigrants and refugees from very different countries of the world, to kind of share a meal with them and to kind of hear their stories of fleeing persecution, fleeing violence, fleeing poverty, and how they sought refuge and how they've now made a new life in the United States. And so I'll share a little bit of that with you. But as we kind of begin our show, let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Brian Anderson, a veteran of two tours of duty in Iraq, and he's an author, an actor, stuntman, and a spokesperson. Brian, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Yeah, no problem. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
So you're an author, you're an actor, you're a stuntman, you're a spokesman. What don't you do?
Well, there's... Good question. I try not to rule anything out.
Okay.
And for a while, it just kind of became about, well, why have a bucket list? Why not just have like a life list? And so I just started checking boxes and trying different things and having fun. And I didn't realize how much fun it could be just going out and trying different things.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that is great. So give our listeners a little bit. This is Memorial Day kind of weekend. You did two tours of duty in Iraq. Tell us a little bit about kind of your experience in Iraq and in that war.
Well, okay. There's not, I mean, there's a couple things I'd like to bring up about it because most people don't know. But I was there for the actual invasion. And when we crossed the line from Kuwait into Iraq, before that, our attitudes were, we were sort of complacent and feeling like, well, what are we doing here? We don't really fully understand. We didn't have access to media. We didn't know what was going on. But when we crossed that line, everything changed because of the people. And it was nothing but women and children lining the streets for like 3 miles once we crossed into Iraq, screaming and cheering, so thankful that we were there to do something, that it was, that's what it became about. And throughout the first year, you could really see how depressed they were and scared they were and how they were just living to survive and not make any mistakes, because if they did anything wrong, Saddam would kill them. Or hurt them. And then our year was up, and I was curious to see what it would be like to go back again. And I went back 8 months later for another year, and I saw huge growth in the economy and the people. They weren't necessarily afraid of us anymore. I mean, the bad people were, but the people that weren't doing anything wrong, they knew that they didn't have anything to worry about. And I made some friends over there. The biggest thing I saw over there was satellite dishes popping up everywhere, and they were able to access more media and, like, have, instead of being cut off from the world, they now were starting to be a part of it. And I thought that that was really cool.
So that must have been a... So having been there for two times, you were able to judge a little bit of the growth, the development over that period of time.
Yes. And not to mention the fact that American soldiers did a lot of good over there, too, that most media doesn't talk about, like building schools and getting medical supplies to them and all kinds of stuff.
You're right. That's not covered a whole lot in the coverage of that war in Iraq. That's didn't get a lot of attention.
Right. Right.
Okay. And while you were there on your second tour, you suffered a very kind of tragic incident, didn't you? That was on your second tour?
Yes, that was on my second tour at the end of it in October of 2005. Got blown up. There's pretty much no other way to say that. But that's the thing, though, is most people see it as a tragedy, and I don't. It's just another life experience that's taught me a lot about who I am and what I'm capable of. I mean, yeah, I might be missing three limbs, but I'm very capable, very independent. Like, nothing really stops me, and I've really kind of learned that it's all in how you choose to look at it. Take down how you treat it and handle it.
Well, Brian, that is a tremendous kind of message of hope and of inspiration, I think, for a lot of people. Sadly or tragically, some of your colleagues, those with whom you were there, when they experienced something that was a tragedy, or maybe they didn't even speak of tragedy, some of them kind of weren't able to move on with their lives in the way that you have. That's part of the experience of war too, is it not?
That's true. Yeah, a lot of soldiers come home with invisible wounds too, where first off, some people get blown up too and have shrapnel go through their body, but don't lose any limbs. And so when they're walking around, you can't tell. They don't look injured. And not to mention the people that have PTSD or PTS or whatever they switch that to now.
Right.
But sometimes when you see things that are so horrible, it's really hard to get that out of your head. I think that soldiers make the mistake of thinking about it too much and replaying it over and over and over in their head. And I think they kind of cause their PTSD from that. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons, but that's just the reason that I've come up with. And so how I justify staying away or not getting PTSD was, as soon as I started myself thinking about any of those bad things, I made myself change whatever I was thinking about to something that was in front of me. I don't know. It seemed to make it a little easier, and it made me think that, for all the friends that I lost, that, now I'm just living in their honor, or living for them, almost as if their spirits, like, looking over my shoulder at the things that I'm doing, and I don't know. That's my silly way.
We're speaking with Brian Anderson, who is a veteran of two tours of duty in Iraq and suffered, injuries by explosion there, and lost both his legs and his left hand, and has now have a career in which he is a spokesperson for a company and a few other organizations, and has done a variety of things. So Brian. But it did take you a while to come back. You had to persevere. You had to work at it in order to be able to kind of move forward in your life. It didn't happen overnight, did it?
Right, exactly. I spent a year, 13 months, at Walter Reed in Washington, D.C., doing rehab. But I did tell myself that when I was... Everybody kept saying, make sure you get good at Walter Reed before you get sent to the VA, because it might be harder to get things or take care of yourself. So make sure you're good before you leave. And so I could have stayed, I guess, as long as I needed to. And the average stay of a soldier was 18 to 36 months. But I only had 6 months left in the Army, and I just wanted to go and start my life. And so I didn't want to stay there any longer than I had to. So I kind of just put my head down and did what I needed. I was fortunate enough that when I woke up, I had a pretty decent attitude of, well, crap, there's nothing I can do about this. It's not even like if I had my legs in front of me, I can put them back on. That's not how it works. So you have to let it go, move on, take it a day at a time, and see where it goes. Because, waking up and looking at yourself as a triple amputee, you're literally kind of like, okay, now what? I really didn't know what kind of life I was going to have, but I wasn't going to rule anything out. And it was a process. I hit a depression after 4 months, and I came out of it pretty quick. It was like 2 weeks it lasted, but it was the fact that I realized that I hadn't experienced any kind of real life in like 16 months, so I needed to go and figure out what life was about or why I was living it. And surprisingly, it was having fun that kind of brought me out of it. And I think people underestimate the power of fun, especially when you're trying to heal. It can be a huge, great tool.
And so, Brian, when you were going through that, what was the thing that brought you the most fun? What was the thing that brought you kind of the greatest joy, even as you're going through that, hard rehab period? What brought you fun?
Well, at first, it was I went to Vegas.
Okay. Did you win?
I don't remember. I pinned a guy against the crap table with my scooter, though. Poor guy. Oh, my gosh. Completely unsuspecting. I was runaway scooter and into the back of him, pushes the crap table across the floor.
Did you do it on purpose, or was it an accident?
No, it was an accident.
I thought you were going to tell me that he took your winnings and everything, and you just ran him over with your scooter, and you taught him a lesson.
No, if that would have happened, it would have. I'm definitely not afraid of that. No, this is poor guy. I wedged the armrest of the scooter chair into the go button, I guess.
Right.
And so it just kept going forward, and I couldn't get it out. And the guy against the craft table and kept pushing him. But in that moment, not that moment exactly, but what it was I was having fun, and it just caused me to not think about what had happened, and it forced me to kind of focus on what was in front of me and live in the moment. And I don't know, it just made things better. And so then I got back to Walter Reed, and that's when I really decided, all right, I'm not done. I'm not dead. Let me figure out what I can and can't do anymore.
So let me ask you a question. Did you have liability insurance on your scooter?
No.
So what'd you do when the guy sent you a lawsuit saying you ran me over with my scooter? You got to pay up now.
I don't know.
So you got back to Walter Reed, and then you decided that had more to do. Well, first of all, you probably figured out you had to get a better driving lesson to learn how to ride your scooter.
Yeah, that was for sure. Yeah. But that was before I worked for the wheelchair company. And so now I do, and I've had plenty of experience. I'm really good at those things now.
Ah, but what year was that? Was probably a while ago that you ran into the guy in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, that was probably in the beginning of 2006.
Yeah, you know what? You're lucky, because there probably weren't as many cell phones and video cameras then, because right now, what happened with that. That somebody would have the YouTube video of you running into this guy, and as you were doing your big pitch for this company and these wheelchair things, they'd be kind of going viral with you running into people. So, So I think you picked the right time to kind of have your fun before there's a lot of cell phones and viral videos. So what you acting? Were you even in some real live shows and things?
Yeah. I was in a couple TV shows. I've been on All My Children, HBO's The Wire, CSI New York is a murder suspect.
Okay.
Hawaii 50.
Oh, I like that show. I like that.
I played a veteran at the end one time.
Okay. And
I was in the movie The Wrestler and the movie American Sniper.
Okay. Do you like acting?
I do. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
You get to be so many different people.
Okay.
And become you at the end of the day.
You got any gigs coming up?
Yeah, maybe, but I'm not really allowed to talk about it.
Okay. Oh. So you're a big shot now. You're a big one of those.
No, I wouldn't say that.
One of those big celebrity types that you got an agent and everything, and like you can't talk to us normal people because you got a big gig coming up. Okay. Well, we're gonna look out. We're gonna look out for it. Can you give us a hint? Is going to be within the next decade at least?
Oh yeah.
All right. Okay. So we'll. What'd you do as a stuntman? That's intriguing.
Oh, I worked on the movie The Dark Knight, and then the movie The Wrestler, and I was a stuntman in that. Even though I really didn't do that many stunts, I kind of just pull off my leg and give it to Mickey Rourke so he could hit somebody.
Now, I know you talked about how you kind of don't think people should have a bucket list. They should have kind of a living list. So let me ask you, author, actor, stuntman, what's still on your living list? What are a couple of the things you'd like to try that you haven't tried yet?
Well, I just produced and directed it. Well, written, directed, and acted in my first short film for a film festival.
Ah.
We didn't win. It was really funny, though.
Okay. Can you talk about that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was for Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge.
Okay.
And we literally had a weekend. They email you the genre, which happened to be family comedy, and then a theme of a new normal or wrongful accusation. And so we tried to do both. And I actually, I play a gay man where I have a husband in a chair, and then we have a son that's in a chair too. And the whole thing is about that our son goes on a blind date, and we ruin it for him. Kind of.
So you ruined his blind date.
Yeah. It's just really weird, and I kind of play like a bipolar person.
Okay.
And I just start like accusing her of not liking us because we're in wheelchairs. And it's really like awkward, funny, kind of out there.
Okay. So, you know, Brian, for the sake of our, we're speaking with Brian Anderson, who is a veteran of two tours of duty in Iraq. He's an author, a stuntman. He's not too good a driver of a scooter because he runs into people in Las Vegas. But other than that, he's pretty talented. And on his second tour of duty, his legs and his left hand were blown up in an explosion, and he lost them. Brian, for the sake of our listeners, I do think that there's a standard thing, you know, when people see somebody who's, you know, maybe an amputee they kind of sometimes we don't know how to react. We don't know, should we feel sorry for the person? Should we go out of our way to help the person? Should we ignore the person? From your perspective, what do you like to see when you interact with somebody? How do you want them to treat you?
I just want to be treated like another normal, regular person. And that's kind of cool that you touched on that, because I don't know, in the last few weeks, I just spent a month on the road, and I've been getting aggravated.
Brian, join the human race. Yesterday, I got so aggravated at a number of things, and I wasn't on the road. So join the human race. But what got you aggravated while you were on the road?
Well, it's okay. So I understand people want to help, and I get that. And I try to let them help, you know, as much as, you know, if they can or whatever. But when it comes to like really stupid little things, like getting into an elevator and them wanting to hit the elevator button for me when I'm sitting right next to the button, it's kind of like, I don't know. It makes me feel like they don't think I can do anything.
Right.
And I don't like that at all. Granted, I've tried telling people that there's no point in getting mad at people trying to help. They're uneducated, or they don't know, or they're just trying, and that's a good thing, you know?
It's interesting, because let me share with you a little bit of something. So the building that I work in, we have services for people who are blind, and so they oftentimes are in the elevator with you, and I've kind of noticed being in the elevator, some of them kind of either want or need more help, and they kind of ask for a lot of it, and others don't. And, you know, if you're paying attention, sometimes you got to go a little bit with the flow. If somebody wants more help, you kind of provide it. But if people want to do it on their own, you kind of let them. But I can understand I can hear what you're saying. You know, you can do a lot of things. I mean, you can do more things than I can do. I can't write a book. I can't direct a play. I can't act. I can't be a stuntman. And you can, and I can't. so you got a lot more ability than I got ability. Well, you know, maybe you don't have your legs, you don't have your left hand, but you got a lot of ability, far more than I do. So, you know what, Brian, I'm going to ask you to help me because I need a lot more help.
Sure.
What
I would say, though, that everybody out there, right, is just, you know, like you said, be vigilant, like watch them, see what's happening. If they start struggling or whatever, ask them. There's nothing wrong. Hey, you know, can I help you out? Or, you know, do you want to do it? That's like a good thing, because I'm the type of guy, if I need help, I'm going to ask for it. I'd be like, hey, man, can you grab this? Or if I'm at a grocery store and I can't reach something, I grab people. I'm like, hey, can you reach this for me? I'm sorry. And everybody, I've never had anybody, you know, lash out or act weird, or it's been fine. And so I would kind of go into knowing that when people need the help, they should ask for it, I think. I mean, some people are too proud, but that's when, if you see them struggling, just say, hey, can I help you out real quick, or are you good? And I think that's a good way of doing it, just nonchalantly, you know?
About it. Yeah, and you know, it's you know, I think what you're saying, Brian, is, and I don't know, I hope these are the right words, but you know, we should kind of treat everybody normal, even if like some people might not have their sight, some people might not be able to walk, some people, you know, might have something else, but other than those things, we should treat people normal. We should interact with them as human beings and kind of do what would, you know, kind of come naturally. Hopefully we've got good natural instincts, but if they come naturally, just kind of let it flow from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Brian, you have been so good in lending your time to us and sharing your story with us. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to be with us. And thanks so much for the inspiration you give to people. And thank you for having a living list. And I agree with you. A living list is much more better than a dying list. So thanks so much, Brian. And thank you for your service. Thank you what you've done. And actually, thank you for sharing with our listeners a little bit of your experience of war in Iraq and some of the things that certainly don't come readily to the surface when we kind of think about war in Iraq. So, Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you. Brian Anderson, a veteran of two tours of duty in Iraq, an author, a stuntman, a spokesperson, and movie producer, and on his second tour, he lost both his legs and he lost his left hand, and still a person who is living with as much and more ability than most of us. So thanks with Greg. Brian was with us. Let's take a break. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself, and our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in 2 minutes on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
God.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Yeah. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And we're in the Memorial Day weekend, and we just had the incredible blessing and privilege to speak with Brian Anderson, who is a triple amputee in during his second tour in Iraq. But, you know, he doesn't let that define him. He is a stuntman. He's an actor. He's a spokesperson. He's an author and somebody who is an inspiration to all of us in that we should not have bucket lists, but we should have living lists. And he's got a living list, and we're just so privileged that he was with us. This has been a really interesting week in a lot of different ways. Tom, you got any news for us?
We do, Monsignor. You know, you had mentioned a little bit about, you know, people getting ready, obviously enjoying the Memorial Day weekend, the things going on this time of year. Well, this is also the time of year of commencements. And interestingly, a week ago Sunday, as people may have heard about, a big group of students back on May 21st, about 100 of them in total, wound up protesting appearance of Vice President Mike Pence at Notre Dame's commencement there.
Well, let's put it in a little context. I suspect there were 5, 10, 15,000 people.
Right? Yes, there were.
100, yes. 100 is 100. Okay.
Exactly. And right. Actually, they actually gave out, upwards of, I think, 2,000 degrees. So, yes, there was about 100 people who wound up walking out. But the vice president was there, Monsignor, and he basically delivered a speech praising Notre Dame, as he said, a vanguard of freedom of expression and the free exchange of ideas. And he basically was rebuking campuses in America that he said become characterized by speech codes, safe zones, tone police, and administrative sanctioned political correctness. As we had said, the student organizers said they walked out regarding the vice president's role in the Trump administration, as well as when he was an Indiana congressman and governor, his refusal to allow Syrian refugees, his refusal to give rights to undocumented immigrants, and also for some of the things he did regarding gay lesbian issues there too. So they just said the protest, in their estimation, although it was only 100 people, was successful. But you know, many people also appreciated the vice president.
Were they
comments.
The graduates themselves, or were they non-graduates?
No, they were graduates, Monsieur. Yeah.
They actually walked out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me just share where I think kind of this is an important issue, I think, for us and for our show Just Love, because we do look at the intersection of Catholic values in the world and how that plays itself out. And I think some of our listeners will recall that a number of years ago, Notre Dame University received a fair amount of criticism by people who didn't think they should have invited President Obama there to speak and to get an honorary degree because of his position on some of the moral life issues that that are an important part of our Catholic belief and part of our tradition. And they kind of were very, very upset with Notre Dame for inviting him. And I would say, quite frankly, my own opinion was, wait a minute, this is a university, we're inviting somebody to speak, this is the President of the United States, and you know, let's hear what he has to say. And we know we have disagreements on certain issues. And if you don't like it, it's perfectly your right to like it or not like it. So I think that's, you know, an openness to hearing people. And even when people disagree is something that I think is part of our tradition. Now, on the other hand, so I kind of feel the same way about Vice President Pence, that you know, there's a lot of things that he's about that I disagree with. And I do think, as I've pointed out on this show in the past, he is a former Catholic who I'm not too pleased with the fact that he said, I have to leave the Catholic Church to find Jesus Christ. I don't think that's a real compliment to our Catholic Church. But I respect he is the Vice President of the United States, and I respect Notre Dame invited him to deliver this commencement address. And at the same time, I absolutely respect the, you know, the right of those 100 graduates to not participate in that. You know, so I think, you know, it's and we let the chips fall where they may. I mean, as I've said oftentimes on this show, I think one has to do things in a way that's respectful, ones that's civil. I mean, I do think there is a difference between, you know, walking out and shouting at somebody and something like that. So, and I don't know exactly what happened there, so I can't speak to that. But it's one of those things which are a little bit uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because I may have a strong feeling that I dislike a certain politician because for certain reasons, and I get upset when somebody invites that politician to do something. But you know that, as I've said before on the show, is, you know, if you look at the election results, okay, I'll give you a point or two one way or the other. But this country, this in the Catholic vote in this past election, was pretty much 50-50 Trump, Clinton. And not exactly, but it depends on which exit poll you read. So you're going to get people, you're going to get Catholics who are going to be upset that Pence is invited to a certain, Vice President Pence is invited because they didn't think that he represented what they wanted. And, you know, I understand when people on the other side are invited. So, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up. It's, you know, and I know that some of our listeners think it's real clear cut that, no, you can't invite this person because of X. And I can tell you that there are other listeners out there who are saying, you can't invite that person because of Y. Well, you know, I oftentimes point out on this is that, you know, Jesus hung out with a lot of people whom he disagreed with. And he also engaged a lot of people who he was not enamored of the way that they were acting. He was in the public square. He was in the world. And so, you know, we do rub shoulders sometimes with people whose opinions on certain very, very important matters we disagree with. So anyway, so it is election, it is commencement time, and those are the things that happen. Tom, thanks for bringing that to us. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking about a social enterprise in Phoenix, the Refuge Cafe, which is sponsored by Catholic charities in that area. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a couple of minutes on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor and our world and yourself. I get that. You know, so let me, okay, I had distracted myself. So now I'm going to distract you. Okay. I have decided that when we say you have to love your neighbor as yourself, I think the people who have the hardest time doing that are the people who haven't figured out how to love themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, because they love themselves in a pretty bad way, well, then they have a really low bar in what they have to do to their neighbor. Because if I don't love myself and I kind of have a little bit of residual self-hate or things like that, well, you know, I think we got to talk to Jesus about that. Because, I mean, if I don't love myself well, I got to do better by my neighbor. But he didn't say that. So anyway, that's a little, listeners, I'm sorry. I got distracted with myself. We'll come back to that sometime. But I'm delighted that we're going to be speaking with John Strawn, who's the general manager of the Refuge Cafe, a social enterprise of Catholic Charities of Phoenix. And the work of the Refuge Cafe, which is a coffee shop by day and a wine bar by night. And it's got some job training that's part of it. And so I'm delighted. Hey, John, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so coffee shop by day, wine bar by night. Tell us a little bit about the Refuge Cafe.
Well, the Refuge Cafe provides a much-needed funding to nonprofit organizations throughout the Valley. We're a neighborhood coffee shop and wine bar that serves tasty food and drinks in a comfortable environment while benefiting the local community. We also have our own private-labeled coffee, which is what we use at the cafe, and we also sell retail and wholesale, called Cafe Esperanza. And it's a proprietary blend of coffee from South America, and we use the finest source quality Arabica beans.
Boy, you sound like you're a real commercial pitch man for an ad company.
they have me well trained.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with about the same amount of credibility too. I mean, it's, anyway. So how much money did you make last year? If you're a social enterprise, how much profit did you turn?
Our profit margin, I think, I'll be honest, last year was the end of our second year of business. And it's a 3-year plan in regards to our business. And we broke just a little bit over even.
Okay, that's good.
It is good. I would say to start a social enterprise that is going to be a restaurant or a cafe, it's definitely high risk. But, you know, we have an amazing staff and a wonderful group surrounding us. So a lot of work has gone into it.
So, John, how big is it? I mean, is it a big cafe, small cafe? How many tables? How many people can you do at a seating?
Fire code is 65 people.
Okay.
So we could do 65 people. We also have a conference room inside of our cafe, which is a private meeting room. It's got a dry erase board, and as well, it has a projector so people could plug in their computers and things like that. There's actually been a nonprofit created in that conference room. So we kind of facilitate towards the neighborhood, small business professionals, and absolutely networking with many, many other nonprofits across the Valley.
So, John, this could go in a number of different ways. It is a social enterprise. So what are the aspects that you've built into this enterprise that make it different than your kind of local Starbucks or your local, wine bar? What do you do that's different that makes it a social enterprise?
Well, okay, to define a social enterprise, what we are is what we would be considered as an external social enterprise. So the cafe itself is a tax-paying LLC for-profit business that's owned by Catholic Charities Community Services Phoenix. But what we've done is to maintain our social mission as well as to observe our fiscal mission is that we've integrated work development into the cafe. What we've done is we've worked with refugees that have aged out of the system, foster kids who've aged out of the system, and taught them the basic small skill set of working. Many of them have not had jobs in a setting to where, you know, they have to basically provide for themselves. And that's why we've worked with many of the youth in regards to having aged out of the system, because they don't have the state helping them or funding them at this point in time. So we teach them the soft work skill set, budgeting techniques, interviewing skills, as well as resume writing. They get familiar with, you know, you have to be here at this time. You have to communicate if you have to be somewhere else. You have genuine responsibility And our goal is to encourage them to be independent and to, you know, even if they lose that first job after leaving the program, they have the skill set to go and find another job. And, you know, it's basically about teaching them that, you know, you may get knocked down, but you got to get back up and just keep going and strive for betterment.
So, John, are the those kids, the refugees, the foster care kids who are aging out or have aged out, are they actually the employees at the cafe?
It is a paid program. Basically, it's a 12-week training program within the cafe, and they do get paid. They're paid throughout the process. And what we try to do is teach them. There are some kids that don't even like working in a restaurant. And so we've helped them find jobs in other areas that they're more interested in. One young man started working in a garage. He loved cars. But what we do is we teach them that there is a structure and there is an environment to any working environment or any group work to where you have to go and, you know, maintain the lifestyle that you want to live.
So in the cafe, well, how many employees you got in the cafe?
In the cafe itself, I have about 6 employees, including myself.
Okay. So, and are those employees, are they kind of the refugee and the foster care kids who are among those 6 employees?
The employees are not. They're a trained staff that are educated and working with the refugees and the foster kids that have experience and training and things like that. It's difficult to bring the refugees or the foster kids in as an employee because we would only be able to employ 5 or 6. Right. And so what we've done is we've made relationships with other businesses around the valley. Goodwill is an excellent help source for us to help find these young people jobs. We work with them. The Sheraton, Hilton, Radisson hotels are really good. Mm-hmm. We've worked with Starbucks, who actually donated to our the work development program through Catholic Charities. And what we try to do within the cafe, as well as being a coffee shop and also work development, we also network and try to integrate many different nonprofits programs that share the same mission in life that we do.
We're speaking with John Strawn, who is the general manager of the Refuge Cafe, a social enterprise of Catholic Charities of Phoenix. And he's speaking about the coffee shop by day, the wine bar by night, and the job training, job development program that is kind of part of it. So, John, would it be fair to say, and I'm trying to help our listeners get a picture of this, that if I call it the Refuge Cafe or maybe something else, it basically is a broader job training, job placement, skills training program, of which the Refuge Cafe is kind of one part of it?
The Refuge Cafe is a part of it. The work development is run by Catholic Charities, and basically the program itself is a Catholic Charities program that is run through their own for-profit business.
Okay. So let me ask you, I know that, you know, in a lot of different places, they talk about it, and a lot of places talk about social enterprise and things like that. If you were kind of, you know, talking to other nonprofits, whether they be Catholic Charities or others throughout the country, what kind of advice would you give them if they said, hey, you know, I'd like to do this. This sounds like something that could be a really good thing. What advice would you give them?
I would give them start small, work your way up, because sometimes I think I would say this in any business sense, whether social enterprise or private business, I think people kind of romanticize what it is that they want, and they end up biting off more than they can chew, or they create more debt than they what they could have in the beginning. Business plan. Have a proper business plan and set, and as well have a moderate amount of operating costs to maintain what it is that you're doing. Now, the business plan you start off with is not going to be the business plan that you have 6 months after opening up. The ability to adapt and to adjust to what your market and what the audience that you're serving is absolutely key.
So What would you say about this piece of the pie, in a sense that, you know, they kind of talk about, like, well, you got nonprofit organizations, which you know, they have a mission, they have a purpose to do good, to kind of for a specific purpose, a specific mission, whatever that may be. And then you got, you know, for-profit companies in which their job, their fiduciary responsibility is to kind of make a profit for their investors, their shareholders. This social enterprise kind of says, well, yeah, we want to make some money, but we also want to do some good. What do you say to people who say, hey, you know, why don't you pick one or the other? You can't really do both. What would your response be to that?
I would say you're wrong.
Okay.
Just because you make money doesn't mean that you cannot have a positive effect on your community and your environment. I think one of the things, it's a term that my boss, Steve Kopovres, and I came up with, and we call it capitalism that cares. I think there's a negative connotation when people think capitalism, because it's dog eat dog. If you're not doing the job, you're gone. We have to make this money, and that's exactly what it is. But you can also run a business and have an effect on your community and also be profitable to create sustainability. And the whole purpose of what we're trying to do at the cafe is to create sustainability for the nonprofit. That's our mission, as well as operate a business within the guidelines, within the mission of what the nonprofit is. It does clearly define what it is you're going to do as a business, and there's less ambiguity in regards to how are we going to create this profit? Because we know how we're going to do it. We're going to do it with our mission in mind.
So John, you talked about having a business plan, a business plan, a business plan, a business plan. And you talked about, like, you're in the second year of your business plan, and your business plan for this year was kind of to break even and make a little profit. How much profit in your business plan you think you can generate in year 5, 6, 7?
5, 6, 7? My goal is at this point in time is for us to be running to be have our work development completely paid for by the cafe through Catholic Charities, as well as to, you know, benefit other programs that we have.
And how much profit will you have to generate to in order to do that?
I believe this year, within our third year, we will be pushing around $40,000 to $50,000 profit.
Okay.
I think by 5, 6. Man, I would love to see that be about $150,000 to $250,000.
On a volume of what?
On a volume of, what do you, I don't know.
A dollar start. Volume. What would be your total revenue?
Total revenue?
Yeah.
Whereas to reach that goal to reach $250,000, that would entail our coffee wholesale and everything else. I would think probably around total, I would guess around $600,000.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, John, thank you for taking the time to be with us. And thank you for giving us a little inspiration and giving us a little bit of guidance. If some other people throughout the country are thinking they want to do some good and they want to use a business to kind of generate the profits to do some social good, thanks. And I hope that the Refuge Cafe is doing well. And if I'm ever in the Phoenix area, in the day I'm going to stop by for coffee. At night I'm going to stop by for a glass of wine.
It sounds like a plan. I'd love to meet you, Monsignor.
Great. Hey, thanks so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Okay. John Strone, who is the general manager of the Refuge Cafe, Catholic Charities of Phoenix, a social enterprise, which is generating a little bit of profit now that's supporting its work and job development program. So that's a good thing. You know, I did share a little bit, Tom, you shared a little news with us, but one of the things I want to share with our listeners is that early this week I was privileged to kind of be at a dinner in which the Archbishop, who's a cardinal now, who's the representative of the Pope in Syria, was at that dinner, and he was talking a little bit about the situation in Syria. And a couple of things which I'll share with our listeners about, first of all, how difficult the situation is, how difficult it is to get humanitarian aid into that war-torn country. But again, one of the things that he was saying, which, again, our listeners may know of, is that he felt that some of the Christians who were there were protected in a sense, that they were not they could worship there, that there was the opportunity for them to worship in that warm, torn country. And there was they were able to do that. The other thing, which he pointed out, which he said it's that it was a little bit of a pretty dichotomous situation. He said, strewn, war torn, everything is in devastated. And then there are some areas where life is pretty normal. He said it's kind of an incredible contrast between one area and the other. And so it's kind of interesting to listen to him speak about the situation that was there and to speak about what was going on. And he certainly kind of felt that, you know, there was a need for the internal situation there to develop. And that's where kind of solutions had to come from. Happy Memorial Day, Memorial Day weekend. And thank you for being with us on Just Love. Just love God, your neighbor, and yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Join us again next week on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.